Welcome to episode 16, the final episode for 2023. If you guys remember, my goal initially at the beginning of the year was to put out one episode per month. Sadly, I am coming up short. This, I think, is going to be the 8th episode that I put out this year, and 8 is not 12, so my apologies. I am going to continue shooting for at least one a month in 2024. I do have plans to finally start working on my what is going to become my studio when I get back in January, which means I'm leaving. So pretty excited. By the time you guys are listening to this, I will probably have already landed in Oahu. I'm really stoked on it. Family vacation's long overdue. We're all pretty burnt out. And of course, I'm going to be doing some car shit while I'm there. There's a really cool vintage Toyota meetup I'm hoping to attend. And I always have to roll through and meet up with the guys from Munais, Hawaii when I'm there. So looking forward to that. And of course, my favorite restaurant on the planet, Uncle Bo's. Going to be hitting that a couple times. So that'll be awesome. Stoked for that, and I'm sure I'll get into other stuff too while I'm there. But in this episode, the first section I think is going to be some kind of scary news that I unfortunately was right about, electric car wise. Of course, if you pay attention to the news at all, you'll know I'm talking about the kill switch or the impaired driver safety system. That they're talking about being a requirement on vehicles by 2026. Anyway, I go over it, and it sucks, and it's scary, and then I follow that up with, more news, different things that I thought were cool, and kind of a couple funny stories in there from... I guess we'll hear it anyway. So yeah, episode 16. Thank you guys so much for sticking with me, for giving me the chance. I really appreciate all of you that are following me on the Facebook page. I've seen a pretty big surge over there, which I'm excited about. I have no idea how the algorithm works. I don't know why it seems to ebb and flow the way that it does. And, I guess with the new followers, I've also gotten a lot more spam, and I apologize. I try and clean that out for you guys as fast as I can, but I'm just one dude, and I'm going as quick as I can on it. So I really appreciate how patient everybody has been with me on that. Also, along with the spam has been a lot of... they're basically like private messages that look like they're coming from Meta or look like they're coming from some kind of Facebook support threatening to shut me down. Unfortunately, Facebook does not have a very easy or clear way to communicate with them or to report these people. So I'm not sure how to deal with that. And apparently I'm not big enough to have a connection to reach out to them to get it solved. So that sucks, but it's not going to stop me. I'm going to keep pushing, and thank you guys so much that follow me on the Facebook page. Because of those messages, though, if you want to reach out on follow me on my Instagram, it's the Lowered HMFIC. On Instagram, I post mostly original stuff there, although Meta and Instagram are the same company. And so there has been some weird cross-pollination there that I didn't intend or that I don't sometimes intend. So it is what it is. And then, of course, I've got the actual webpage that I run. I do longer format posts there. I don't get to update that as much as I would like, but... it's there. It's thelowered.com. So yeah, check them out. Thank you guys so much for following me and your support for 2023. And I hope you enjoy the episode. Okay. So, I guess I'm mostly doing news in this episode. This is one I have kind of been dreading talking about because I feel like I'm beating a dead horse with it. But, well, I was right. And who doesn't like taking the time to point out that they were right? So, apparently this is something that was initiated back in 2021, but it hadn't been funded. And so, and you know, the way that they put the, our government puts out these bills, they're so massive that people, the, our representatives just don't get a chance to read them fully. But what I'm referring to is, kill switches for electric cars. And, I always say, you know, don't take my word for it. You know, if you want to look into this, feel free. Do your research. If you're a left-leaning guy, you'll find all kinds of articles that make fun of people for calling it a kill switch. And if you read the article with a critical eye, you'll see that while they're kind of making fun of people for calling it a kill switch, it's a fucking kill switch. So basically, what the... It's something that's rolled into the, I want to make sure I say it correctly. So initially it was part of the Jobs Act. So it was a Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act that was passed in November of 2021. But the specific portion of legislation that I'm talking about focused on, they're saying it's focused on combating impaired motorists by mandating advanced drunk and impaired driving prevention technology. That's a kill switch. Basically, what they outline in this is that when this rolls out, if it does get funded and therefore improved, that there will be driver monitoring systems that are required under the auspices of public safety, which are supposed to go into effect by 2026, which require or allows the AI, as yet undesigned, I'm doing air quotes, AI, looking at you through the car's in-camera systems to basically make a decision by your appearance whether or not the computer feels that you are drunk or impaired. And when they say drunk or impaired, they're not just referring to, you know, are you drunk or high, but they're also, if you, depending on the article you read, they fold tired into that. So they haven't, the system isn't, air quotes again, technically isn't something that they've rolled out, or they haven't fully fleshed out what or how it will do this job, but by the description of the job they want it to do, they're, as I started to say, that they're basically allowing this, your own car to look at you and make a decision of whether or not the car goes or does not go. That's a kill switch. I don't understand why anybody would try and sugarcoat that. It's terrifying. There's no other, if that doesn't scare you, like I seriously don't understand how you've lived the charmed life you've lived, where you feel like, oh, this is a great idea. I definitely can understand, like, if you're 3 years old and you read that and you're like, oh, the government's trying to keep us safe. And you're like, okay, I get it. You're 3 years old. You don't, you've never read a book. You haven't read very many books. You don't know your history. You don't, you know, you just don't know. But if you're over 3 years old and you read that, and whatever side you live on, if you're left leaning, if you're right leaning, anytime you're surrendering control to a government agency of anything, you should be given that side eye. But to surrender your ability to travel to the whims of the programming of a car, That's crazy. I mean, I'm not advocating for drunk driving, obviously. I'm not advocating for somebody driving impaired or tired. I am advocating for somebody to make the decision. And I certainly, if it isn't obvious already, would not be comfortable surrendering my decision-making process of whether or not I travel to a vehicle. And if you want more information as to why, or if you're not, this is something that I have been saying is coming for a long time. And this is something that I have been warning about for a long time. It's just, you know, these electric cars, they really are cell phones with wheels. And they've got built-in 4G, 5G modems. They've got built-in Wi-Fi. Whatever changes anybody wants to make or anybody wants to mandate, it's a software update away. It's as fast as they can write the software, like, that shit is going to happen. You know, anywhere that car has a cellular or Wi-Fi connection, it's going to get that information. And unless a manufacturer steps in, like Apple stepped in to tell the federal government, you know, hey, we're not unlocking our phone for you when the government asked. Unless a electric car manufacturer steps in and says, you know, hey, we're not going to write software that allows the car to decide whether or not its owner can drive somewhere. Because once they get this toehold in, you know, they're going to go for more. And I know it's real popular for folks on the left to hate on Elon right now. And it seems like it's popular for people on the right to lionize Elon. I don't think Elon is going to be our savior on this one. I think he's too in bed with China. And if any country in the world would want the ability to turn electric cars on or off, you know, to control its population's ability to travel, China is pretty much already doing that shit. And if they haven't formally, you know, required it or had that software, you know, pushed out to the electric cars that already exist, you know, on Chinese roads, it's any day now. And, you know, like Tim Cook said, when the federal government came to Apple and said, you know, hey, we need a backdoor into your phone so that we can look at, you know, this possible terrorist activity. And Tim Cook said, you know, hey, if I build you guys this backdoor, then that backdoor exists and somebody else is going to find it and no Apple devices are secure. And so the federal government hired a bunch of, you know, hackers, or, you know, software guys, however you want to say it. They were able to break into Apple's system and, you know, defeat the passcode. And immediately Apple pushed out a software update that fixed that backdoor. So I think there's a real opportunity here for some electric car company. A small company like Bollinger, I think, would be this would be an amazing win for them. A company like Lucid Air, a company like Rivian. I don't expect something like this from Ford or General Motors or certainly not Dodge. And I wouldn't expect something like this from European country, any of the European manufacturers either. But I think a small American company like Lucid or Rivian or Bollinger could do it. They could come out like Tim Cook did and say, look, we're not going to install this software that precludes people that are buying our cars from driving our cars. You know, it's a slippery slope. We're not going to take that away from them. You know, people have a right to make their own decisions, good, bad, or ugly, and they will weather the consequences of those decisions if they make the wrong ones. But we're not going to make the software that prevents our customers from traveling which is the only reason why they're our customers anyway. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not anybody picks that up. Anyway, I hate being right about this. I really do. I think as much as the electric cars scare me because of the capability, because of the ease at which something like this could be instituted, I know I've talked about my experiences in the cellular industry, watching cell towers be shut down in the grids that we're supporting, where protests were occurring, and how I was watching that being done without any kind of judicial input. It was just sometimes not even done at a federal level, just local level. How scary it was to see that that was even a thought, that they would want to turn off cellular access for civilians, especially during protests that in many cases were turning violent, preventing a civilian from calling for help, from texting for assistance, or to tell somebody they were okay, or to tell somebody that they weren't okay. That was really scary, and I saw it happen a bunch of times. And if you think I'm blowing smoke up your ass, you've got the internet. If you're listening to this, real quick and easy search, you can find real easy. ACLU, I think, has two cases, I believe two cases that are still active, that where they're suing cellular service providers for that, for shutting down cellular service to their customers without any judicial, input or requirement. So, I mean, if they do that for cell phones, to people that are in situations where they may need to call for medical attention, and you think that they won't do that to your car if you're also in an area where they don't want you to leave, or if there's a natural disaster occurring and they want to control, the freeway from being clogged, let's say err on the side of like a good reason, I guess. If you think that they won't do that once they have the ability to control the vehicles, I would say read a book. They've certainly done worse. So, yeah, it sucks being right about this. It'll be really interesting to see if any manufacturers step up and take a stand. I certainly hope they do. So, yeah, as if you didn't need an excuse to stick with your internal combustion engine as long as you could, here's yet another reason. Anyway, moving on. I'm going to start off with some news. There's a bunch of stuff going on. I'm pretty excited about quite a few of them, actually. Cadillac is getting into F1 racing. Andretti Motors has announced that they are hoping to have a car ready for the 2028 season. It sounds like they've fully registered with the FIA. And a lot of people, I'm not a big F1 guy by any stretch, so I'm just happy to, I'm just always happy to see an American company breaking into a racing series. And I'm especially happy when GM pushes Cadillac forward, because they really go for it. The Corvette racing team has done some pretty amazing things. Cadillac has been doing, pretty well in other racing series. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in F1. Some folks are saying that it's not, I guess, again, like I said, I'm not a big F1 guy, but I guess amongst people that are not Cadillac fans, there's a lot of saying that it's not really something that should be allowed, that Cadillac's not going to be bringing anything new to the table. And I'm like, well, I mean, they're bringing Cadillac to the table. By definition, that's new. Or at least, not something that F1 has seen in a long time. Red Bull and Ford are already there. Audi, it sounds like, is also talking about coming in and nobody's giving them any shit. So whatever. I'm just glad to see GM is pushing performance. And while F1 is, in my opinion, and probably the reason why I'm not much of an F1 guy is because even though the technology does trickle down and a lot of innovation occurs there that, you know, eventually makes it into actual vehicles, unlike race series like NASCAR, engine, suspension dynamics, shock tuning, and engine management, all those things are at such a high level in F1 that, you know, it can't help but generate new technology that ultimately does end up in cars that we drive. So I'm pretty cool with it. So that's it for that. Let's see. I don't really have too much to say about this one, but I am pretty stoked on the images that are out of the new Mazda RX concept car. I don't know how it will translate to an actual, you know, if it will even translate to something they're actually going to build, but I kind of love the little flip-up headlight covers, kind of a nod to, you know, the pop-up headlights of, you know, that we all kind of, well, most of us kind of love from the 80s. I think it's a great looking car. I've read rumors that it's supposed to be a hybrid rotary powering, like a rotary as a backup to a electric, but I mean, it's a concept, so who knows? I just think it looks great. Was really stoked to see it and glad to see Mazda putting its hat back in the performance car ring. Ford announced, I guess they announced it a while back, but they recently came out with pricing. Guys that have been following me for a long time know that I have this, I still have my first car. It's a 66 Galaxy 500 convertible. I also have a hardtop. That's the one I spend most of my time posting and driving. But I do actually still have a convertible. It's really rough. Thanks to a good buddy of mine, Derek, I was able to get a full Hotchkiss TVS system installed on it about a little over a year ago now. And at the same time, he put a full AccuAir air ride on it as well. And that's pretty much where she sits. Unfortunately, I've been pouring a shit ton of money into Trekkie Verde and bought myself another project, Rick's Sonomare, in the meantime. So I've got too many irons in the fire, as my father would say. But I had been talking, before I spent all that other money, I had been talking about putting Ford's new Godzilla motor, the 7.3 430 horsepower motor that Ford came out with as a replacement to the V10. It's available in the Super Duty, as I'm sure most of you know. It's really super reasonable for a Ford engine. If you get the standard Godzilla, 430 horse for $8,500, it's not bad. It's not too far off of, you know, GM pricing, which, I mean, if you're a Ford guy, that's unheard of and very, very nice to hear. The Mega Godzilla has been announced a while ago, but everybody was kind of waiting on pricing, and I've seen different pricing posted. So I guess we don't technically know what the actual pricing is yet. It has been announced, but I went back and looked at the Ford website a couple times and it still wasn't posted yet. But the, I don't know if I would still call them rumors, but from what I've, the consensus on what I've read is that it's still 7.3, but it's going to have forged internals and upgrades to the intake. And that is going, and I think there's a different cam and there might be something going on with the heads too, but I haven't been able to find concrete evidence of that. So I don't know for sure yet, but they're saying around 615 horse to 675 horse, which is kind of a big gap or a big jump. Here's to hoping for the latter. Obviously more is always nice, But it'll be interesting to see what the actual pricing is on the Mega Godzilla. Hopefully it isn't too far off the standard Godzilla, but if I know Ford, they'll probably double it. So what are you going to do? Moving on. I came across, I know I posted this a while back, and I really was prepared to catch a lot of shit for it. I was surprised at how many of you guys were, I guess, brave enough to admit that you were thinking similarly. And what I'm talking about is the 2023 Prius, the new redesign. I don't know what generation this is of the Prius. I really don't fucking care. It's a Prius. They're just piloted by some of the most annoying people on the planet, in my experience. But damn if this new Prius isn't, it's not good looking for a Prius. It's a damn good looking car. The first couple times I've seen one, they were both black, and all the Toyota badges and the Prius badges were black as well. And so I didn't have any idea what the hell it was until I was right on top of it and the light hit the badges just right. And I was like, God damn it. Anyway, I came across this Jalopnik interview, and they were interviewing Satoki Oya, and I apologize to him if I'm butchering his name. He's the chief engineer. Oh, I guess it's the fifth generation Prius. And Oya was saying that his favorite view of the Prius was the side view. And I had to go back and look, because I really only see it going down the road, and I've seen it across an intersection, and I've seen it like rear three quarter. And I would have to say, after seeing like beauty shots of it side, it's not a bad looking car from the side view, but I would say the front and rear three quarter views are far and away the showstoppers of that particular design. From the side, it gets a little amorphous to me. Not that it's bad looking from the side, but I was really surprised that was his favorite view, when the front and rear three quarters are really, really good. It's interesting they interviewed him over it. I mean, I guess he was the chief engineer, but the actual designer was a guy named I'm butchering that name all the shit. Yuji Fujiwari. He was the project chief designer. And then it sounds like the exterior design was between two guys, Hideki Lida and Mario, I'm really going to butcher this one, Majdanzik. I don't know. I got to say, I hate to admit it, but I think it's not good looking for a Prius. I think it's a fantastic looking car, and I'm hoping that it's an indicator of Toyota's future design language. I have not been a fan of the current Supra, at least in stock form. There's quite a few body kits that kind of iron out the flaws. And I haven't minded the Supra design language as it was transitioned to the Toyota Sienna. But I don't know. I think the Prius is a much more kind of high-end feel to it. I think it's just an overall better looking, more modern, without trying to be modern, I guess. Design, it's hard to explain, but I think it's cool. Let's see. The Cybertruck is out and being delivered. I haven't seen one in person yet. Although a bunch of you guys have sent me pictures of seeing them delivered. Well, I take it back. I've seen versions of it at the Peterson Museum, but like I haven't seen one in the wild. The ones at the Peterson are like pre-production concepts, and from what I've been reading and hearing from people that have seen them in person and some of the reviews, fit and finish is typical Tesla, not awesome. I listened to Matt Farah talking about it, and today, and I guess he hasn't driven one yet, but he people were giving him shit about his Joe Rogan interview that he did quite some time ago, about how he said at the time he didn't think it was going to be able to be built because he didn't think it would meet the pedestrian standards. And, you know, building a car these days that's not a world car is, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense money-wise. So I definitely understand where he was coming from with that. But in listening to, you know, Matt, he's pretty well, or Matt, Mr. Farah. Matt Farah doesn't give a shit about me. So I'm kind of going to talk a little bit of shit right now. And I do want to preface it with one, I am nowhere near on Matt's level. I wish I was. I'm not. Maybe someday I will be. And I have met Matt several times, and he has been nothing but kind and awesome to me. So he's absolutely the kind of guy I would love to have a beer with. And there are tons and tons of podcasts I've listened to where I'm sure, like any of you that listen to it or maybe even listen to me, have wanted to chime in and be like, oh, but, you know, and obviously, you know, it's just not how that shit works. Anyway, with that being said, and I think Matt would agree, he's a pretty left-leaning dude, and he's got some real beef with Tesla, the company, and Elon Musk in particular. And I would have to say that the stated beef that he has is pretty damned hard to argue with. He mentions that, you know, Elon Musk has set goals or, you know, rolled out press releases and not delivered. He has taken deposits, you know, and then missed the deadlines and pushed things back on rolling out the actual product. And Matt's absolutely correct on all of that. And I mean, Tesla guys, hardcore Tesla guys that, you know, think the moon and stars come out of Elon's ass, argue. I mean, facts are facts. You got to be real. One thing about listening to Matt talk about the Cybertruck today that I was kind of surprised he didn't mention, because, you know, he does spend a lot of time parsing this other guy's review and for not being all encompassing. And they talk about how the Tesla truck isn't really bulletproof, but then he doesn't elaborate on that. He does mention that they shot it with a Tommy gun. Joe Rogan shot it with an arrow, and they shot it with some other, you know, smaller, or what most people would consider small arms fire, and the bullets didn't penetrate. That's fucking bulletproof. I don't know why we're mincing that. I don't know why we're trying to split hairs. You know, if he wanted to be all encompassing, he could have, you know, reached out to, you know, an actual, like a legit up armorer or a manufacturer of armored vehicles, and then compared, you know, what arm level or armor level something that can take up to. I think the biggest round, I think that they have shot at it so far, has been a 45. I don't know if they've tried to put any 223 or 300 through it. I'd be surprised if you couldn't penetrate with 223, let alone 300, you know, depending on what kind of a round it was. But if you're driving a Cybertruck through, you know, any town USA, 9 times out of 10, if somebody's popping shots at you, they're going to be carrying a 9mm, including law enforcement. Not to say law enforcement doesn't carry AR-based rifles, as in California they do, and I know that they do in other states as well. But, I mean, it's fucking bulletproof. I mean, there's plenty of shit to talk. Plenty of shit to talk. To like try and hang your hat on that as a caveat doesn't make any sense to me. Could they say, bulletproof to armor level, whatever, you know, whatever the technical term is for something that can take some, you know, small arms fire. Absolutely. They certainly could. And that would be totally acceptable. But I don't know. It was just weird to me that that was something that was harped on. Another thing that really kind of surprised me about Tesla, or continues to surprise me, honestly, is the thing about the Cybertruck in particular is that it was a way for Elon to, you know, build something that he thought was cool, and he owns the car company. Why the fuck wouldn't he do that? Like, if you owned a car company, wouldn't you want to build shit that you thought was cool? So giving him shit over that doesn't make sense to me either. He also, in many interviews, explained the reason why he was building the Cybertruck out of this special stainless steel specifically, was to create a bigger demand for that material to drive the price down of that material. So, because that's the material he uses to build his rockets. I mean, the answer is there. He's explained why he's doing it. I don't understand why people keep ignoring that, and they'll talk shit about, you know, well, Matt goes, well, I've owned a DeLorean and I know what a pain in the ass that is. And I'm not discounting that. I'm not saying that it's not going to be a pain in the ass. And I'm absolutely not arguing the point that it's going to be a nightmare for anybody that owns a Cybertruck that hits something with it to get those panels replaced. And, you know, actually they covered it pretty well. I've heard a few people talk about how hard it is to get body parts just for general Teslas that they've been building for a while, let alone, you know, a stamped stainless steel body part, or finding a body shop that's going to want to mess with it. I can't imagine what a nightmare that's going to be. But I mean, as far as why he chose the material he chose, he said why. You know, it's not a mystery. So that's weird to me as well. I mean, I've certainly been critical of Tesla, and I will continue to be so, because, you know, I feel like I recognize Tesla for what it is, and it's weird to me when people don't accept it. And I know I've said it before, but I look at Tesla the way I looked at the original Prius, in that it was not that great. But the original Prius, and all Teslas thus far, in my opinion, they're not really cars as much as they are a proof of concept. You're buying a status symbol. You're investing in the future, basically. Any money that you spend on buying, a new Prius, obviously Toyota's got shit ironed out with the Prius. As I mentioned earlier, I love the look of the new one. And Toyota fit and finish and quality is unquestionable. But the Tesla, it's, you know, the first person to bring electric cars back in a viable manner and make them work. And they are selling them like crazy now. Which is fantastic. Great for Tesla. But when you're buying one of these vehicles, you know, you're not buying a vehicle from a company like Toyota or Ford or Chevy or Mercedes, like a company that's been around long enough to figure shit out. So their fit and finish isn't great. They make a lot of mistakes. You know, and it, as long as you go into it knowing that, I mean, then I'm cool. You know, but if you go into it thinking that you're buying a vehicle as sorted as a Toyota or a Ford or a Mercedes would be quality wise, you're fooling yourself. And that seems to be the consensus. And I don't think anybody's going to be surprised. Apparently, a couple of the folks that have taken delivery or driven the Cybertruck that's going around for people that are cool enough to get rides, you know, when the new stuff comes out. I guess one guy cut his arm pretty good. Another guy got his jacket caught and it sliced his jacket. I guess there was another report of somebody cutting their hand. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's a fucking Tesla. There's no way the body panels aren't going to line up. That's not what Tesla does. And working with something as heavy as that stainless steel, I'm sure it'll take them even longer to get that figured out. So anyway, Cybertruck's rolling out. People are taking delivery. I'm sure I'll see one up here pretty soon. And as soon as I do, I will tell you guys about it. But I don't know. As far as the whole Matt Farah thing goes, like I said, super nice guy. He's obviously got a hard-on for Elon, and I get it. Dude's got a lot of faults. Especially if you're somebody that's kind of is more more left-leaning. You know, he is the target du jour these days. So most of the beef that Matt, if not, I would say almost all of the beef that Matt presents, you know, whenever he talks about Tesla is damned hard to argue with. I'm not saying he's wrong, but you know, in giving a guy a hard time about leaving shit out and then leaving shit out, I was like, well, okay, I'll talk about that. What was the other thing? It was another podcast thing. Oh, okay. This is not really news. It's just a stupid story. And one of those, like, kind of shit that happens to me. So, I happened to be listening to white guy Oprah, Rogan, and he was interviewing Whitney Cummings, and he was talking about, it was just like a really quick conversation, and they were talking about frogs and fleshlights in the basically they were talking it was just like a really quick thing and they were joking about silicone frogs or whatever, and then like how that like it was a video of a chimp raping a frog. Basically, the chimp picks up the frog, opens the frog's mouth, and then like has sex with the frog forcefully. I don't think they were on a date, and they were saying, "Oh, he's using the frog like a fleshlight," and I just started laughing my ass off because one day at Grand National Roadster Show, I was in line going into the show, and I had been. I had just recently been to Austin for Lone Star Roundup, and I was telling, you know how these shows are. You go to these big shows, you meet up with guys that you only get to see a couple times, you know, at those shows. You know, I don't know, maybe you guys have different experiences, but for me, when I go to a show like Grand National Roadster Show, I'll see guys that I only see at that show. You know, are maybe vendors, or they might be... you know, guys that come in from other countries or, you know, from other parts of our country just for that show. And you run into them and, you know, take turns buying each other a beer, telling stories and all that kind of shit. Well, I had hooked up with a couple guys at, we all stayed at the same like area where the hotels are. And then we all met up and caravaned in so we could be in line. And we're in line and, I'm leaning on the front fender of my Galaxy, and there's this cab over in front of us, and it's me and a couple of their guys. We're kind of in a circle, and one of them was like, "Oh, hey, how was Austin? You know, how was Lone Star? What'd you think? You know, how was Texas? Like all that shit." And so I was just talking about it, and I was explaining how I was talking to a realtor. And they were, some guys I know I don't think they still work there, but at the time, some guys I knew worked at Austin Speed Shop, and they had bought homes in the Dripping Springs area. And I guess that's where Jesse James also lives. He's got a place in there somewhere. And so they hooked me up with their realtor, and I was talking with the, you know, they were showing us some property. We were thinking about moving out there at the time. And the realtor said, this is a really strange area, referring to Dripping Springs, because Jesse James has a big spot. There's some guy from Google that owns a pretty good spot out there as well. And then the guy that invented the Fleshlight also lives out there. And I was laughing, you know, telling the story to these guys, like, how weird of a trio. You know, you've got a motorcycle turned firearms manufacturer. You've got a tech nerd. And then, you know, a masturbation toy guy. You know, not that they all live on the same street, but I, you know, in the same area. I just thought it was funny. Well, the guy that owns the cab over, who none of us knew, he just happened to be the guy in front of us. He turns and he looks at me and he goes, oh, that's my brother. And we all look at this guy and we're like, the Google dude? And he's like, no. And we're like, Jesse James? And he's like, no. And I was like, bro, the Fleshlight guy is your brother? And he goes, oh, yeah, give me a second. And he goes to the cab of his truck and he's like, oh, shit, I took him out. And he goes, normally I keep some samples in my vehicles because it's my brother's company. I just hand them out. And I was like, can you imagine? First of all, let's stop here for a second. Imagine every vehicle you own has a box of Fleshlights in it because your brother owns the company. Like, if you get pulled over and a cop's looking through your car and he finds a box of Fleshlights, like, just that alone, like, that is hilarious to me. Just the, I don't know. I can't imagine having a Fleshlight, let alone so many that I keep spares in all of my vehicles. But apparently he had taken it out. And so he comes back and he's like, oh yeah, you know, my brother runs a company. And I'm like, okay, I've got a, like, this is what we're talking about now. You know, I've got a ton of questions. Like, what, how did that happen? Like, and it turns out I don't know if this guy was full of shit or not, so take this with a grain of salt. But what this guy said was that his brother was like a special effects guy, and he was, you know, he worked for different movie studios, and that they were working on I don't even remember what movie it was, the guy told us, but it was a movie, and part of the movie was there was a shit ton of frogs that had to fall from the sky, with like a biblical type thing or a storm type thing. And so the guy was like in his shop and he's making, you know, silicone frogs, like by the tens of hundreds, because they're a shit ton of them have to fall. And I guess his wife was pregnant and was not the horny kind of pregnant. And he was feeling left out and lonely. And he was back in his shop making these frogs. And he had a flat panel, I guess, of silicone this mixture he had made. And he had folded it over, and I guess his imagination was piqued, and took it into the shower with him and had a good time, and then basically made the Fleshlight. And so when they were talking about, you know, the frog or the monkey using the frog like a Fleshlight, it just reminded me, like, that's literally how the Fleshlight became. Like, according to this guy. So anyway, I just thought that was funny as shit. Completely unrelated, I guess. But I mean, I did hear it at a car show, so technically it does fit. I don't know how true it was, but it was an interesting conversation. And if anybody has feedback on that or knows if it's a different story, I'd be open to hearing it. I thought it was kind of funny. Another story the guy told, which, cause I coming from a tech background, like I do, I've done tech support for, you know, various things, and, you know, ran teams of technicians for, various things over the years. And I was like, well, wait a minute. It just hit me all at once. And I was like, hold on. So this guy invented fleshlights. He sells fleshlights. Is there a fleshlight tech support department? And the guy starts laughing. He goes, yeah, there is. He goes, it's not really tech support, but, you know, they take orders and, like, you can call the company that makes fleshlight or his brother's company, and he has people staffed to answer the phones, and they do answer questions. And I was like, oh, shit, dude. I would almost pay to listen to those calls. That's got to be the funniest shit ever. I mean, obviously it would get old real quick, but, I mean, if they have a file of, like, their, like, wildest fleshlight tech support calls, like, I'm down to hear them. That has got to be incredible. And the guy started laughing, you know, at my take on it, obviously, because, you know, it's probably not the typical question he gets about fleshlights. And he was like, I guess, I don't remember how it came up, but he was saying that he had heard one of the calls, and I guess this guy was calling in and he was complaining that the fleshlight was chafing him when he was using it. And the guy taking the call is all confused because it's silicone. Like, there's like literally nothing to chafe. Like, it doesn't, there's just, there isn't that in the design. And so he starts troubleshooting with a guy. And he's like, okay, well, let's walk through this. You know, if you have the fleshlight, I guess you take it apart. And he's asking the guy, well, when you got the fleshlight, like, you got all the stuff out of it, right? And the guy's like, what do you mean? And he goes, well, it's a silicone thing, you know, so when it's fresh and when we manufacture it, there's a cardboard tube that they put down inside the fleshlight to keep it from closing up or sealing, I guess. And they normally, I guess they put like an ad or a coupon or some shit in there. And the guy had not removed any of that. And so he was using it with this cardboard tube still inside it. And I was howling. I was laughing so goddamn hard over that. I mean, I can't imagine that the tube that they're putting in there is as wide or big as that thing is cut to open. So anyway, use your own imagination. I thought it was hilarious. Just kind of like a weird story. But not the kind of thing I can bring up in other conversations. So I thought I would tell you guys and thought maybe you guys would enjoy it. I guess that's the kind of stuff that you get when you record a podcast or podcast after listening to other podcasts. Anyway, on to the next. All right. So as I'm recording this, I am getting ready to fly out to Hawaii. I'm really excited. It's a family thing. So not like I'm going for a specific show, although I've definitely got car stuff lined up for you guys. You know I do. Always do. I can't be going anywhere without doing car shit. Really excited to stop by Moon Eyes, Hawaii, and hang out with those guys, and hopefully meet up with some of the folks I met up with last time and see their cars. And I guess there's a Toyota meet going on, like vintage Toyotas on Oahu. I'm gonna try and check that out, so I'm pretty stoked for that. Finally got off my ass and dropped the Galaxy hardtop off for the full, HKS, or Hotchkiss TVS suspension system. Bought that quite some time ago, and have just not had with everything going on with Truckee Verde, haven't had time to have it installed. And so with summer coming up and the Galaxy having sat for so long, I couldn't abide any longer. So dropped it off with my guys at Ultra Truck Works. They always take good care of me. So they've got the Galaxy now, which is really weird. not having it in my garage. So I'm really excited to get it back. I'm really excited to have it, have that Hotchkiss suspension installed on a vehicle that I'm actively driving. And the plan is, once that is done, I've got a really shitty old school Granada-based disc brake conversion kit on it that just isn't right. And the goal is to, once I get the car back from Ultra Truck Works with all the new suspension in it, which will hopefully correct whatever that weird, this weird steering issue I was experiencing, to then go Wilwood brakes front and back. So it may be a while before I can make that jump, but that's the plan. Baby steps, trying to move the Galaxy a little bit, you know, move that ball down the field a little bit more. So I'm really excited for that. I got Truckee Verde back with a 4L80 in it, and they're pretty much immediately we knew the torque converter that they had put in it was just the guys at TBR partnered up with the transmission guy, and the transmission guy built this torque converter for it, which probably would have been fantastic for somebody that is actually drag racing, which I am not. And it was pretty obvious, almost like to everybody immediately, that that torque converter just was not the business. So didn't have it very long, ended up taking it back to TBR, and they put another torque converter in it, which was way better, but still not right. I think the guy that's building these torque converters has got it in his head that I'm drag racing this thing, which is just not, it's basically a daily driver. I spend most of my time in traffic, and I think that's a conversation we're going to have to pin down with this guy to finally get this shit right. Matt is hopeful that they'll be able to, you know, electronically tune most of the lag out. And I'm not as confident as he is. I think they're probably going to end up putting in, you know, whatever General Motors suggested version of a torque converter is, or whatever, like the step up above that would be. For the 4L80, but I mean, I spend most of my time in traffic, and if I'm not in traffic, I live in hill country, so I'm kind of going slow behind other people up and down hills, and a drag tuned, or I guess these performance version torque converters that we're getting, it's just too much heat, and it's just not what we're looking for. So that's been a serious pain in the ass. And if that wasn't enough, apparently the trans mount that they had to, or that they used to put the transmission in, which put the even though it's a larger transmission, it put the transmission higher up in the frame, closer to the body, which you would think would be great, seeing as how I drive the truck so low. Unfortunately, it's also a crew cab, and so now the drive shaft is hitting the back of the cab, which is not a problem I had before. So that's awesome. And apparently it's also hitting like at least two other places on the frame or the support for the bed. So I'm pretty frustrated. I love Truckee Verde. I do not want to sell her. Although at this point, if somebody hit me with the right offer, I might consider it. No, I'm kidding. I would not. There's talk of back halving it now. That seems extreme, and that's just not the route I want to go. If I'm going to spend the money to put a back half on it, then I'd rather just go all the way and finally do a full stock floor body drop frame on it. But as anybody has that has attempted it or has tried to price it out will tell you, it is not cheap, and I am not rich, so I cannot afford it. Unless somebody out there wants to sponsor me. I would absolutely be open to somebody sponsoring me with a frame. That would be awesome. But unless that miracle happens, we're going to have to figure something else out. So not sure what that's going to be yet. Like I said, I'm about to leave town, and kind of all this shit is dropping at the same time. On the good side, big thanks to Aaron Sakahara. Dude is awesome. He's another guy that's really big in our local scene and beyond. Aaron has worked with, you know, a ton of amazing shops that have been around in and around the Sacramento area and beyond, building air suspension vehicles. Big stereo guy, alarm guy. He's had SEMA vehicles, magazine vehicles. He's big in the scene up here. Super nice guy. The mini truck owner, the original owner of the mini truck that I recently purchased, I talked about in the last episode, 1998 GMC Sonomare, as Rick named it. I guess Aaron had done some electrical and alarm work on the Sonomare. So I thought that it needed new, it wasn't originally a power window truck, but Rick had converted. I don't know if Rick did the conversion or the stereo shop that put in the stereo did it, but somebody converted it to power windows. And I thought that the motors were just getting old. Aaron said he'd take a look at it for me. I also wasn't sure exactly what the alarm was able to do. I didn't know what its capabilities were or how it was wired, you know, and of course Rick isn't around anymore for me to ask. So reached out to Aaron to kind of give it a once over and give me an idea, and he was able to save me some money. Turns out the power window motors were great. They were just wired weird. And so he put in some relays and changed the wiring and streamlined things quite a bit, judging by the pile of extra wire he gave back to me of the old wiring harness. And they work fantastic. We've got a set of temporary switches in now, while I figure out what kind of switches I want to run and look for a center console to mount them in. So that's going to be my next personal project for the Sonomare, is to find a center console that works with the stock bench seat, which I am keeping. I would like to find something with a cup holder or two, if possible, and something with room to modify to put switches in. I may end up having to build something myself. I've been shopping around for a while and kind of looking at stock S10 center consoles and cup holder configurations, trying to figure things out. And that may end up being what happens, is just I just sculpt something and cast and make it myself out of fiberglass. But we will see. I'm stoked to have power windows that work great again. So that was a nice step forward. And while Aaron had it, he did a full underglow install, which I know some guys give me shit about it. I don't care. It's a mini truck, man. It's era correct. It isn't something that Rick had on the truck. And I know that Rick wasn't specifically a fan, but I don't have to turn it on. You know, I put it on there for me. It doesn't take away from the aesthetic of the truck, and like I said, I can turn it on and off. It was just something that Aaron has done to his other cars, and it looks cool the way Aaron does it on his vehicles. I think it looks great on Sonomare, and I think it'll look even better once I get the Boyds polished. Which leads me to my next move. Trying to figure out a set of rollers for Sonome Air, because I have to, I did find a place to polish the wheels, but in order to get the wheels polished, I have to obviously take them off the truck, but I also have to get the tires dismounted and then drop off the wheels. They will polish them front and back side, and then I have to take them and get tires remounted and, you know, put them back on the truck. And I guess the turnaround time for that is a couple weeks. And so I gotta have a way to move this goddamn thing. So a couple guys, I posted a picture of a another S10, similar generation S10 as to the S15, with a set of three spoke wheels on it. And a bunch of you guys found companies that might still have those wheels. So I don't know if that's the direction I'm going, but I am leaning that way. And I was shocked at how reasonably priced they are, which means they're probably Hecho and Chinas, but they're not replacements for the Boyds. They are placeholders for the Boyds, and it's a style of wheel that I've liked, you know, for a long time. And so I'm thinking about it. I'm not saying that's what I'm going to do, just thinking about it. So that's the Sonome Air. That's the Galaxy. That's Truckee Verde. Buick is fine. I've been driving it just around. You know, nothing too much going on there. Unfortunately, I can't afford to pour money into all my shit. I can't afford to pour money into the shit I have. But what are you going to do? Got to get stuff done. Can't let it sit around. So, yeah, that's the update on the fleet. Fingers crossed, when I get back from Hawaii, the new suspension will be in the Galaxy. And I will be swapping Sonome Air for Truckee Verde after they give me an idea of what they think it's going to take to get the back end figured out. They're going to put, when I drop Sonome Air off at Ultra Truck Works, she'll probably be there for a while we figure out a set of rollers. They have Hellwig, was apparently nice enough to send out a full suspension, a new bushing kit for the Sonoma, or Sonome Air. So a big thank you to Hellwig. I really appreciate it. You guys are amazing. As soon as we get that installed, I'm sure I'll review it. And I think it's getting new shocks and, the bushings in the driver's door are wore. So the door is sagging a little bit, and so they're going to put new bushings in it. And I think that will be, that'll really put the ball in my court to get that center console done and to figure out getting the, getting a replacement hood and the paint and pinstriping redone. I'm really hoping to get the, I don't think I'm going to be able to get the Boyds polished in time because of the turnaround time between now and then, and I'm going to be out of town. But I would very much like to show the Sonoma at this year's Sacramento Autorama. I'm pushing hard to make that happen, but I guess we'll see. We'll see how that works out. I mean, worst case scenario, I just do it next year, but I don't know. We'll see. So that is the update on my junk. Kind of depressing, but still, I guess, technically forward movement. So take that with a grain of salt. Anyway, on to the next. All right, so that was episode 16. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you guys so much if you made it this far. And I'm really looking forward to getting as many out as I can next year. I'm going to try and be much more consistent. The worst case scenario, 12 for 12, one per month. if not 24. Maybe if I shoot for 24, I'll get 12. We'll see. Anyway, thanks again for sticking with me, and I really appreciate all of you guys that follow me on the Facebook at The Lowered, the guys that are following me on Instagram, The Lowered HMFIC, or just checking out my webpage where I post the longer format blog posts. That's also The Lowered. And yeah, thanks again. I really appreciate it. It means a lot. I'm really enjoying seeing all of your projects, and like guys keeping me up to date on their progress is always really fun. And yeah, hope you guys are doing good too. And if I don't get to record another one of these beforehand, for those that celebrate, you know, Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah, for Merry Christmas to everybody that celebrates that. If you don't celebrate either, as always, I hope you guys are good. Hope you're in a safe place. Hope you're surrounded by friends and family and plenty. And you get to, you know, still enjoy, you know, whatever it is that you're into. Probably automotive-wise if you're listening to this. But whatever. Thanks again.